Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the final episode in this series of The Masterson Inheritance, an improvised historical saga of a family at war with itself. Tonight, our team of performers will attempt to spontaneously dramatize the final chapter in the story of this great family, a story based entirely on the suggestions of our studio audience. No script, no rehearsals, just an audience and a couple of microphones. To bring you this story of rage, repression, and rumpy-pumpy, tonight we have Josie Lawrence, Fela McDermott, Paul Merton, Caroline Quentin, Lee Simpson, and Jim Sweeney. I'm going to step down amongst our studio audience now to get the ingredients, the ideas for our show this evening, set in the 1890s. So the first thing we need is a suggestion of a fashionable pastime for that period. Fashionable. Croquet. Sorry?
Croquet.
Croquet. Excellent. The next thing we need is a reason why parents might disapprove of their children.
Drugs.
Drugs. Right, good. The next thing is a suggestion of a token of love.
A rose.
Ah, from two people who I think should get together after the program. And now we need a title for tonight's episode, and we'd like it to include the word Masterson, so the something of the Mastersons or the something, Mastersons of something.
The Mastersons lose everything.
The Mastersons lose everything. So we're aiming for a happy ending. So tonight we have croquet, drugs, a rose, and the Mastersons lose everything. The Masterson Inheritance, Book 6, The Mastersons Lose Everything. A sunlit lawn on a fine summer's day. In Hyde Park, central London, the gentle clunk of ball on mallet as a game of croquet takes place. Tarquin and Rosemary, two young lovebirds, out for an afternoon's croquet. A proper pursuit for two young lovebirds in these prim and proper days.
Darling, do you think they should let sheep on Hyde Park?
The older gentlemen prefer them.
No, they don't.
Tarquin was often saying things he shouldn't say. He was known as a waggish tongue about town. He was a fashionable fellow, and the cut of his jib showed him to be so. He was flaunting a particularly fine checked suit today, which Rosemary admired.
Ooh, that's a wonderful checked suit, Tarquin.
Do you like it?
It's very, very beautiful, and it suits your wit.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. It's all the talk of Paris, checked suits like this, you know.
Really?
Yes, they're like giant crossword puzzles. You can just fill the words in while you're waiting for the latest omnibus to come round the corner.
It's perfectly fine.
Four across. Donkey.
Yes, I do.
And you'll take it to the cleaners and simply have the clothes washed away. It's most enormous fun.
But wait a minute. I just spotted a clue on your inside leg.
Have you?
Carnivorous.
Yes,
it hits.
Yes, that'll be six down, that one, yes.
Meanwhile, back at Rosemary's house, the house of the Mastersons, at 34 Ridlington Place, her father, George, was standing in front of the fire. Above him was a landscape, an oil painting of a beautiful country house, the ancestral home of the Mastersons, which they had moved away from some 40 or 50 years before to set up their business in London. He was speaking to his wife, Imelda.
Will you require anything else, eh?
It was Inch, the butler.
No, that will be all, thank you.
Anything at all, just ring, sir.
Very well.
I'll be waiting. Looking forward to it.
That will be all, Inch.
I just lick your boots from
here. I'll be off then, sir.
Imelda.
Yes, darling.
I was thinking back to the old days.
Why, you darling?
Yes.
I don't know, darling. I sometimes feel a longing, a yearning, a deep and misty-eyed feeling in the very pit of my stomach that says, go back! Go back, Imelda! Return to Masterson Hall.
Yes, across the years, our home calls us, but will we...
Sorry, did I hear a ring?
Inch! We were reminiscing.
Whenever you want me, just ring.
Inch, just bugger off, will you?
Yes.
Imelda had indeed heard voices. Voices which George did not approve of. For she was into the fashion of spiritualism. She held regular seances and spoke, so she said, to people who had passed into the great beyond. George, however, disapproved of these practices and thought them humbug.
I'm not having spiritualists in our house.
That was because he couldn't say the word properly. Back at Hyde Park, the croquet game finished. Tarquin and Rosemary were sitting down to a cream tea just by the bandstand. But Rosemary had become upset. She was speaking of her brother, Peter, and of a rather bad habit he had acquired with the set he had got into at the salons of fashionable London.
He was very strange. He was smoking a very weird pipe. It smelt of juniper leaves and strange flowers. And then he started to walk on the mantelpiece and say, I'm a daffodil, I'm a daffodil.
Tell me, my dear, is there any chance of him getting me some?
I don't know what you're talking about, Tarquin. I thought that you'd help me. I don't like seeing my brother in this way.
But don't you know it's the most fashionable thing in London at the moment, to smoke opium and to take cocaine?
I don't care what you say. I think it's absolutely awful. And I'm going to try and get Peter some help. And if you won't help me, then I'll just have to go somewhere else.
And so, her attractive speech still ringing in his ears, she wandered off. Back at the house, back at 34 Brickington Place, not in the posh dining room or drawing room, but down in the cellars, was a young scullery maid. Her name, Ruby.
La, 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 la,
she was watched over by the severe cook, Betty.
You've missed a bit on the grind, Ruby.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I wasn't concentrating.
Well, concentrate more.
Yes.
I want everything in this room blackened.
My hands are going to be fair worn to the bone.
Yes, well, you've got to learn to get your hands worn by the time you get married, else you get hard skin. But that's another story.
And Betty was a fountain of wisdom and knowledge.
Anyway, I've got to go and prepare a meal. Her ladyship's having a seance of all things. I don't know what it means, a seance, but she's told me I've got to prepare a table for six. Feel the back of my hand.
Ow!
And so Betty the cook went off. But as she went, Ruby was joined by a young, fresh-faced lad. His name, Jeremy, and he was the yard boy. He'd taken a bit of a fancy to Ruby, but he didn't really know how to say it. He was a simple lad, but a kind one all the same.
No, 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 no.
Hello, Ruby.
Oh.
Four.
Hello, Jeremy.
Four.
I love it when you do that. It kind of blows the hair back on your face.
How are you, Ruby?
Oh, I'm all right, Jeremy. Apart from all this blackening I've got to do, and then the yellowing and then the greening in all the other rooms in the house.
But
what sort of day have you had, Jeremy, out in the yard?
I've been scrubbing that yard of yours better than it's ever been ever. It's the best yard I've ever been. I did it for you, Ruby.
Oh, Jeremy, shouldn't say such things. Somebody might hear from upstairs and I'll be fired.
I don't care. I love you.
Oops, Jeremy.
I do. I've always loved you.
Oh,
I love the way you work and everything. You're
Jeremy,
just wonderful.
Jeremy, you're pushing me up against the grate and it's burning me bum.
Suddenly he walked away. Suddenly he walked away because he knew that romance between the servants was strictly forbidden on pain of being sacked. And so he looked at her and said his farewells, love burning in both their breasts, but a love which was forbidden by their status. And so we leave these young lovebirds with a pure and simple love that the aristocracy can know nothing of. Across London, in an ornate drawing room, languidly draped over a chaise longue, is Oberon. Oberon, brother of Rosemary. A man, well, much of a man, but a man who is taken with a new fashion of decadence, of foppery, of poetry and of things beautiful. With him is his friend, Gladys. They are comparing notes on their latest verses, for they are poets, as all young men should be in this day and age.
Ah, Gladys.
Yes, what is it? What is it? What is it?
I've been thinking about your name.
My name?
And wondering whether you should have it changed.
What on earth could I have my name possibly changed to?
I was thinking of something more decadent.
Really? What could be more decadent?
It's not now in decadent, is it?
What could be more decadent than Gladys?
Oh, Gladys, 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 only you could put an in the word decadent. You're so decadent yourself. Nothing more decadent than adding consonants where they shouldn't be.
Of course. I also am the same with vowel sounds.
Really? Put your vowels where they shouldn't be, Gladys.
All right, then.
But it wasn't now enough.
Oh, Gladys, Gladys, I'm feeling bored.
Bored?
Yes, decadence can be so boring.
Was it not Samuel Johnson who said, when a man is bored of London, he should move to Birmingham?
And then they reached for the substances which fed their dissipation, the substances so disapproved of by their parents and indeed society in general.
Another macaroon. It's still coconuts, don't you know?
Back at Midlington Place. Rosemary had run into Imelda's dressing room. She was upset. She was upset because of her row with Tarquin.
Oh, Mummy, Mummy, Mummy!
Oh, Rosie, darling, don't cry, sir. What's the matter?
Was there anything? Well, I heard a bell ring.
A kerchief of you, please.
Certainly.
It's Tarquin. I must tell you something, Mummy, that may upset you.
Yes, sir.
Please try not to be too gallant.
Let's not squeak too high.
Yes.
I told Tarquin about Peter.
Yes?
Peter has changed his name to Oberon and become decadent. Yes, probably. He's taking lots of very strange drugs. Macaroons, I think they're called.
Don't mention that word.
Well, Mummy, I guess if I told Tarquin,
yes,
he would help me.
But no.
He would help me.
Yes,
he would help Oberon. But yes, he just wanted to know about the macaroons,
too. Yes, oh, darling. That's terrible, darling.
Can you help?
Excuse me, was there anything? It's the butler's day off.
I ordered a kerchief.
I can get you one immediately.
Darling, we have to help Oberon.
I think there is one way we could.
How, darling?
Well, your seance tonight, Mama.
Yes?
If you invite Oberon.
Yes?
He is your son, after all.
Yes, darling.
Then,
yes?
Perhaps we could manufacture some kind of way of a spirit talking to him, saying, don't take drugs.
Just say no. I like your making. Oh, yes.
Was there someone here saying it was the butler's day off?
Yes. Well, yes, it. Why?
The butler.
Mummy, do you think you could help me? I don't want to lose Tarquin, and I don't want to lose my brother.
Very well, darling. I will concur with your wishes.
And so the plan was laid. However, things had moved on apace. George Masterson had recently looked at the account books and he had noticed that money had been going missing at an extraordinary rate. And he had a very good idea in which direction. He called Peter, now called Oberon, because of the narrator's mistake, into his study. He was going to have a severe word with this lad.
If you want any tea or anything, sir, just ring the bell.
I may need some help with my voice.
Certainly, sir.
Oberon.
Yes, Daddy?
I've been a little bit worried about the accounts.
And he showed Oberon the account book, which showed that the funds of the Masterson family were fast running out. In fact, another week in this manner, and they would be penniless.
Oh, God, Daddy. Nothing to do with me at all. Don't come there innocent with me, you young fop. You decadent, disgusting specimen. Oh, Daddy.
Oberon was fading fast. At which point, Oberon fainted and fell to the floor. A very relieved George left the room muttering to himself about young people today.
Young people today.
Out in the garden, on her afternoon off, her one afternoon every 6 months, Ruby was looking at the grass, looking at the flowers and looking at the trees, enjoying the sunshine, for the sunshine is free and available to all. Hey. A young man is walking up to her. A young, simple man, but an enthusiastic man. And in his hand is his love. The token of his love.
Jeremy.
Hello, how are you?
Well, I'm all right.
You look beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
You look so beautiful, more beautiful than all the flowers that are here.
Oh, thank you.
I've got you this.
Ooh.
I'm sorry, I've got you this as well.
Beautiful rose I've ever seen.
I grew it myself. I grew it my little window, even though the sunlight barely gets through. Wherever the sun went, I moved it so that it got the sunlight.
Oh,
and I watered it with my own spittle.
Oh. That is lovely. Yeah.
But then that one died, so I bought that one instead.
Oh, this one's just as lovely. I shall treasure it for always.
Will you?
Yes.
Oh,
Jeremy.
Yes.
Jeremy.
Yes.
I can't see you anymore.
I'm over here.
Sorry. It's that pampas grass. It's that pampas grass. I couldn't see you behind it.
What were you saying? No.
I was going to say, Jeremy. Jeremy, my darling. Don't you realise if we get caught together, I shall be fired and you too, and we shall be destitute, and I'll probably get pregnant in the end, and it'll be tragic.
You mean I can't see you anymore? We can never see each other, share moments, little glances in the scullery, things like that. I can't have that no more.
Not unless you improve your lot.
All right. I'm going to go and work on my lot, a lot, and make it better than what it is now.
Oh, yes, Jeremy, do, and then we shall be wed.
I'll come back here a wealthy man, and you will marry me.
Yes, Jeremy.
So Jeremy left. He left his job. He left the only security he had. But he left it for love. Midnight. Midnight in the front parlour. A red glow emanates from one single lamp hung above a table, and around that table, the members of the séance. Imelda, Rosemary, Oberon, and Gladys.
Don't feel nervous, just ring the bell. Anything
else?
Thank
you, Ince, that'll be all.
Oh, Mummy, I'm nervous.
Don't be nervous, darling. I've done this zillions of times.
Close your eyes, please.
Oh, how decadent.
Quiet, Oberon. Mummy's going into a trance.
Is there anybody there?
It sounds as if they're playing the xylophone.
Gladys.
Is there anybody there?
Anybody there?
I can hear something, Mummy.
Yes, I can too.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Who's calling me back?
Why, this is Imelda. Are you my spirit guide?
Yes, I'm your spirit guide.
Name yourself, O verdant one.
Cliff.
Speak to me, Cliff. Is there anybody here you want to contact?
I bring a message from beyond the veil. From a master son.
How terribly decadent.
Return. Return. Return.
Mummy.
Yes, what we planned.
I know.
I know that. I'm fully aware of that, you silly cow.
Jeremy was making his way through the streets of London, looking for an opportunity to make his fortune. He was walking down by the docks, and he saw a poor fellow, a fellow lying, beaten and bruised on the ground. He walked up, and he noticed that the gentleman had an American look about him.
Don't be fooled by the look, Governor. Blimey, I could have sworn you were an American.
Oh, no, it's the 10-gallon Atwood does it and all.
And there's six shooters. You look in a bad way.
I have. I've been beating up something rotten, I have.
Who did it? I'll get them for you.
Sorry about that. I'm not a married man and I have to take me pleasures where I find them. Off you go, Fido. Off you go.
I've just run away from my house where I work. I've got to make my fortune, make my money so I can marry the woman I love.
Have you?
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of money in them there inventions that people keep coming up with.
Inventions?
Yeah. There's a guy just invented the motion picture.
Maybe that's what I could invent that, although he's already invented it, but I could invent something else.
Well, why don't you go round his house, look at his notebook and invent the next thing before he does?
Yeah, you're right. Thanks, Governor.
That's all right.
When I make my fortune, I'm going to bung some your way.
Oh, lovely.
So Jeremy went off, fired with enthusiasm by this strange cockney geezer in cowboy apparel who pestered dogs quite a lot. At Rillington Place, the next morning, there was a knock at the door. The knock of authority.
I'll get it, I'm the butler.
The door was opened and there stood a policeman. He had a stern look on his face and he was shown up to the drawing room where he had an interview with George Masterson.
Morning, sir.
Good morning. Oh, sorry, you're talking to Mr. Masterson. Should you require anything, just ring.
Will you just ring? Go away, Inch.
I love you.
Excuse me.
Is your name George, sir?
I think it is, yes.
I've come to see you for a reason I have no idea what.
He'd come...
But consulting my notebook, it says...
It says that Auberon's macaroon activities have been drawing too much attention. People have been complaining, and indeed, Auberon was hogging the macaroon market in London. He was one of the biggest dealers in macaroons, and the police were going to crack down. They'd been leaning on him because of his position in society, but now the time had come to prosecute.
I see. That makes it very clear.
Yes. You want to see me say that again? Not only is your son a macaroon addict, but we believe that his dealer is Mr. Kipling.
I'm terribly ashamed. Could you arrest him and put him in prison?
Well, it's a slightly unusual role for the police, but I... Well, I really don't know what the rule book says about this, but I'll give it a good go.
George went out and fetched in Auberon. He was placed before the policeman, and he broke down.
Please forgive me.
Show me your arm, young man. Oh, no, my voice has changed. Hang on. Show me your arm. Just as I thought, crumb marks.
And George watched as his son, crying and bleating, was dragged through the streets of London. The accounts showed that there was no money left for the Mastersons. And this stone of a man, this great edifice of a man, crumbled and wept.
God. Oh, bloody hell.
Down in the kitchen, Ruby was not attending to her duties. She was daydreaming. She'd been in a peculiar mood of late. That had been noticed by Betty the cook, who was having a bit of a severe word with her.
You can't go moping about over a man. I've never moped about a man in my life. That's why I am what I am. Sad old cow. What are you crying for?
I'm just very sad because Jeremy hasn't been in touch with me for so long.
Was that the name of the yard boy?
Yes. The one that hasn't been here for months. Don't you remember?
Jeremy.
Yes.
Why, Why, I know where I've heard that name. Look in the paper.
I can't read.
I'll read it to you.
Thank you.
Jeremy Yardboy, new inventor of a very strange machine. Yeah. Apparently he got sponsorship from a man that hailed from America. He's going to be rich and famous, your Jeremy. Perhaps he'll come back for you.
My darling Jeremy, an inventor.
Yes, it seemed that Jeremy had discovered Dolby noise reduction many years before it was given to the world. And he'd made a fortune from his invention.
How absolutely thrilling.
Yes.
Do you think he'll return and take me to be his wife?
Well, yes, probably, unless he's found someone much better looking than you.
In the drawing room at 6 o'clock that evening, the whole household were assembled.
I'm terribly sorry, but, everybody's got to go. And that includes you, Inch.
Won't change the way I feel about you.
No, but I can no longer pay for your service in our household.
Who needs payment?
Look, just go, will you, Inch?
Don't cry, Rosie. I can't help it, Mummy. We've been so happy here. Is there nothing you can do, Father?
Suddenly the door swung open and there stood a strangely familiar but unfamiliar figure. Yes, it was Jeremy. He'd heard about the Masterson's plight and he'd come back.
Hello, Ruby.
Hello, Jeremy.
Have you kept my rose?
Oh, yes, it's pressed here between my breasts.
I'm worth a fortune now. More money than you ever had, Mr. Masterson. I could help you out, though.
Oh, Daddy, Daddy, listen to him, please.
Jeremy pointed to the picture on the wall. The picture of the building. The symbol of the family, Masterson Hall. He had bought it.
I bought that.
Yeah. Well, how did you get all the money? You must have had some help.
There was a man I met by the river. He pointed me in the right direction after he finished with the dog.
Suddenly the man was there. He revealed his real identity, who he was. A Masterson from across the water. A Masterson from the Americas. A descendant of the Mastersons who had left England for a new land.
Why, I'm as American as apple pie.
Of course you are.
They had bought Masterson Hall and they were all to move there.
Jeremy, I was wondering if, as you are now the new proprietor of Masterson Hall, if I could perhaps, well, be your butler.
Yeah, you can be our butler.
And Ruby, could I be your maid?
Yeah, all right. But you've got to blacken everything, yellow everything and green everything all the time, all day and all night, and no days off and no money and no holidays. And I'm nothing for you, all for me, presents and gold and everything. And I'm going to be very rich and get fat and eat chocolate all day and have my own horse and everything, aren't I, Jeremy?
He's not bitter or anything.
As for me, I'd just like to have access to the stables about all.
And I'm going to do my bit down in the kitchen.
No, you're not. You're fired.
So it was they returned. They returned to the place from whence they had come. They had returned to the beginning of the story. They returned to the place that was their inheritance. The Masterson inheritance. In the Masterson Inheritance, you heard Josie Lawrence, Fela McDermott, Paul Merton, Caroline Quentin, Lee Simpson and Jim Sweeney. Dialogue, music and sound effects were improvised live at the Paris studio. The studio managers were John Whitehall, Wilfred Acosta and David Blount. The producer was Phil Clark.